There's no I in team, but there is one in Indeed, and that's the hiring platform that you need to build yours. When you're hiring, you need Indeed. Instead of spending hours on multiple job sites searching for candidates with the right skills, Indeed's a powerful hiring platform that can help you do it all. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it makes hiring all in one place so easy because Indeed does the hard work for you. They show you the candidates whose resumes on Indeed fit your description immediately after you post so you can hire faster. Join more than 3 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Start hiring now with a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Offer good for a limited time. Claim your $75 credit now at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. And support the show by saying that you heard it on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Before we get started with today's episode of Bench with Bubba, let me tell you about one of our sponsors, Draft. If you love fantasy baseball, then you need to try our new favorite app called Draft. It's daily fantasy baseball, but not like the other guys. On Draft, you play live snake drafts with other people just like in your season-long league. Drafts last just for one night. Once you're done drafting, that's it. No trades, no waiver wire. Just set it and forget it. And the best part? You play for cold, hard cash and get paid out the next day. Drafts start from just $1, so there's a draft for everyone. Trust me, I love playing drafts. I play golf, I play NFL, basketball. You can play them head-to-head, three-man, six-man. There's running leagues. You win one night, it keeps going for four, five, six nights. You can play a dream team. There's all kinds of great ways to play draft, and you can join me today. Just search Draft in your app store or play right from your computer on draft.com. And when you enter promo code SDSports, you got to enter the promo code SDSports. You get a free entry into a real money baseball draft when you make your first deposit, but you have to use the promo code SDSports. That's right. Play in a real money game for free just for using the promo code SDSports when you make your first deposit. Just again, search Draft in your app store or go to draft.com and enter the promo code SDSports. Now to this week's edition of Benched with Bubba. Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Benched with Bubba, episode 115. Going to talk some fantasy baseball tonight, some recent news, some players to possibly pick up for your fantasy stretch run. In order to do so, I'm going to be joined by a man you can find some work on rotowire.com. He's a member of the Sleeper and the Bus podcast, and he's on Twitter at Jason Collette. Jason, how are we doing, man?
Good. How are you?
Great, great. I appreciate you, you jumping on and getting to talk to you about some fun stuff. And like I said right before we started, probably talk a lot of Rays baseball.
Hey, that sounds good. They're playing well. You would have talked to me in April, I would have said no. But different time of year now, they're playing better baseball, and so I'm happy.
Yeah, they're playing really well. They're fun to watch. You know Yancey as well as I know Yancey, and I live vicariously through his text messages, and lately they've been much, much better. So things are good.
This is true. This is true. I was worried that he was going to melt down when he found out that Corey Dickerson, his jersey during Players Weekend, was not going to be C-Dick. I was a little worried that he was not going to recover from that, but apparently he has. He's all right.
He did shed a few tears, we could tell. So he's a little heartbroken, but I think winning baseball is curing everything right now. Let's talk about a little player news before we go into individual players for possible ads. Will Myers, the San Diego Padres magic trick and moving around carousel with Will Myers. He's going to third base now. Nothing like coming off the DL and playing a new position. And the night he started at third base, somehow Christian Villanueva went to first base, which made no sense either. What's your thoughts of Will Myers now gaining another position eligibility and hopefully staying healthy?
No, go back to catcher. That's really what I want Will Myers. If people will remember, he was catcher eligible in Yahoo leagues there for his first year, and that was a beautiful thing because he was originally had that played a handful of games in the minors at that particular position. It'll be nice if we can get the healthy Will Myers. I mean, that's been the last couple of years. It was great with the 2020 seasons. You know, batting average was not great, but who cares when he was doing the production he was putting up for us, which was wonderful this year. Hasn't been healthy. When he has played, he's pretty much put up the same type of numbers that he's always put up. It's just we need to see him over the full course of a season. So third base eligibility is nice, but, I mean, honestly, in all seriousness, I want him to catch again. Go back there and try that, and let's see where it goes. Will Myers is not somebody who ever ends up on my team because I'm still bitter about how he played with Tampa Bay and then went off to have the big years. I mean, when that trade first happened, I looked at that like, oh, hey, this is another Delmon Young situation. Let him go somewhere else and be a mercurial player. And then he went off and actually became the player that I wanted him to be when he was with my favorite team.
Yeah, it's funny how things work like that sometimes, unfortunately. But we'll see. Third base for Will Myers would be great if he went back to catcher. We got catcher, first base, third base, outfield. We'd have a modern-day Jose Oquendo. He's as close as we'll ever get to one. So that'd be pretty impressive back there. Let's talk about the Dodgers bullpen right now. Kenley Jansen goes down with his heart issue again. He kind of had it a couple years ago. It's flaring back up. First reports were, you know, it could be out for at least a month or longer. This morning I actually saw he could be back within a week or so, which is crazy to think about. But for now, the Dodgers bullpen's in flux. Already back-to-back nights of blown saves with different closers. How do you approach the Dodgers bullpen situation?
Stay far, far, far away. The safest option, you can look at Scott Alexander. Maeda, I think it's really going to be a situational thing. Nobody really stands out from the group. I think if you made me pick one guy, it'd be Alexander, but I'm not very confident. You could see their contender opponents blocking any kind of waiver claim trades that they tried to shove through. Fernando Rodney would have made some sense here, but when Fernando Rodney was going through waivers, they didn't have the problem with Jansen, so it wasn't like that can happen. But if you look at it now, yeah, I think one thing they could try to do is if Sergio Romo were exposed to waivers, but I don't see how Sergio Romo clears waivers. Anybody in front of the Dodgers would just put the claim on him because he's not expensive at all. And because he's been closing in the AL East for a good chunk of this year, would make a lot of sense here as a California guy has pitched with the Dodgers. But I just don't see that happening. Until that's going to happen, you're just going to have to kind of pick and choose. And I saw a lot of fab dollars being thrown at Alexander in the leagues I was in last weekend. And I think that's just where it's going to stay right now.
Yeah, a lot of fab dollars spent Alexander's way, and he blew the first save against the Giants. And then I think it was Maeda last night blew the save. It's ugly. Stripling went on the DL today. Yep. Axford's on the DL with the fractured fibula. There's all kinds of fun going on in that Dodgers bullpen right now. Let's talk about another interesting injury. Lance McCullers goes to the DL, going to be out for a little while. And that's the first time this year the Astros won't have their original starting five, which is, I think I heard, it's the first time since like 2012 or something like that. Crazy stat in this era of baseball. But he's going to be down for a little bit. How do you think the Astros kind of approach this situation?
Yeah, that's an amazing stat that they only have five starting pitchers. When you look at what the Dodgers did last year, you look at how many pitchers the Rays have used this year and all types of roles, but to not have a single pitching injury, I mean, that's how you repeat as world champs. Obviously, they're having a terrible time of late. They dropped, six or seven at home. They keep dropping games to teams they cannot afford to be losing to in their division right now, and that's hurting their case. I mean, I think when we looked at this is why they've kept Colin McHugh this whole time. But I don't know. I think they may just go to the whole Johnny bullpen strategy at this point, because you can't just because Colin McHugh was a starter in the middle of the season, you can't just flip a switch and be like, all right, dude, you're a starter again. It's going to take some time to build that up. And if you're going to do that, you may as well go through the pen. And then we've got expanded rosters coming up here in 2 weeks. And then so in 2 weeks, they could throw six guys in a bullpen game and it wouldn't matter. So I really think that's where they're going to go with this, and just leverage guys like McHugh, like Peacock, and things like, and Davinsky for two innings, different things along those lines once Debo's back. I know he's out right now as well. But they've got enough depth in the bullpen, Ryan Pressly as well. They've got different pieces they could use for multiple innings, and I think ultimately that's what they're going to do because I don't think they have a solution. They can just pull up from the farm. And again, everybody's going to block something. If there's a starter with a decent with an affordable rate, people are going to put the claim in on him. I don't know if anybody's going to pull a Randy Myers thing and put a claim on everybody and get stuck with a big old salary like the Padres did years ago. But to me, the bullpen, using your bullpen every fifth day is going to be the way for them to go.
Yeah, and that brings me to one of my first race questions of the day now. The bullpen, and that got people – there's a lot of mixed reaction to that, the bullpenning. And I it made sense to me for like one or two starts. Now it seems, what, three or four times it's getting there. But you have Bleaks pitching well, Glasnow will get to, and some others. You've been a big kind of fan of it. You've been tracking the stats on Twitter, and they've been, I believe, one of the best ERAs in baseball since this has happened. It's been quite successful. Yep. Since you watch it on a day-to-day basis, what is your thoughts on this? Is this something that can actually expand in the game, or is this kind of a one-trick pony, a unique situation?
You look at the number of teams that have trouble finding five good starters. I mean, let alone – and it's tough. It's really tough. Only the teams with the big payrolls can afford to pay for that kind of thing. A lot of guys, they're fighting some innings eater, and innings eater is a kind way of saying, go out there and give us five. We don't care what you do. With this bullpen approach, it's not something that they – I mean, there was talk before the season that they wanted to be more cognizant of the third time through the order penalty, but this is the second time through the order penalty. And this whole process was really born out of necessity because they ran out of arms, and it was starting pitcher arms. If you look at the season before the season, Brent Honeywell, Jose De Leon both go down. Honeywell was going to be slated for the rotation, not the opening day rotation, but in the first third of the season. Jose De Leon was probably going to be a multi-inning reliever. But those two guys go down. They get Anthony Bonda in the trade for Steven Souza. Then he goes down. So that was 6, 7, and 8, really, if you think about it, or even 6 and 7. So all of a sudden, they're out of these guys to call up. And so then that impacts the AAA. And so in AAA, they started doing this bullpenning thing. And then they said, you know what, we're going to have to do it at the major league level because we don't have another option. At the point – Jake Faria was out with the oblique injury. Then they had lost, Chris Archer was out for a time. Blake Snell was out for a time. Yanni Chirinos was out for an extended time. They traded Nate Eovaldi. I mean, they just had to do this all year. And I like the way it works. I mean, when you look at some of the guys they're using, I don't think Ryan Yarbrough is a starter, but he could come in and follow up. You have Ryan Stanek coming in and throwing 98 from the right side. The first time you're up seeing somebody, and then as the second time the batter, you're seeing a lefty that's slinging at 91, 93 from a three-quarters angle. And then the third time you come up, you're likely seeing another righty that's throwing hard from a different – and three or four times through the order, the opposing team could see a different pitcher each time. And I think that's why it's effective. And I also think it's going to stick around for at least one spot in the rotation next year because they don't have anybody to call up. I mean, the two guys they have – that are in Durham that are major league ready are both relievers themselves. And Ian Gabeau and Colin Poche, both of those guys, Gabeau's been closing in Durham, and Poche's been doing the opener thing himself down there, pitching two innings, sometimes three innings, posting ridiculous numbers in the role. And those two guys will come up next year, and you add them to the Diego Castillo and the Jose Alvarado and everything else that I'm sure they will find another vet or two to replace Sergio Romo, and if they do something with Chaz Rowe, who just came back off the disabled list, those types of things. But there's a lot of young arms with different talents, and I think this is the best way to utilize them rather than going out and spending $5 million on some innings eater. Wade Miley's worked out well for the Brewers in that area, but that's the exception. A lot of these guys are using innings eaters. I mean, go look at look how Matt Moore's playing out for the Rangers this year. Look at how Giovanni Gallardo or Bartolo Colon, just because they're eating innings doesn't – I mean, the best thing it's doing is giving your bullpen a bit of a rest. But when you have 22 pitchers on the 40-man roster and 18 of them are in AAA or the major leagues, you can afford to cycle these guys up and down. And that's when you do that bullpen construction. It's very handy to have guys with options. I mean, you look at the Yankees. I think they have one guy. I think Louis Sessa has been up and down between New York and Scranton 58 times this year, where he keeps going up and down. He'll come up and pitch, okay, go down. Or Jonathan Holder. Somebody's got – there's like one guy in that pen that has options, and they keep using it to that point. But you look at the Rays bullpen, and I think five guys have options, and they can call them up, call them down, call them up, call them down.
Yeah, no, it seems to have gone like really, really well, and I enjoy it. It's interesting as a fantasy person, as a DFS player, kind of figuring out how it's all going. It changes your approach on things. But do you, like you said, that the Rays will most likely do it at least one spot next year, and it makes sense to me. Everything you said makes sense. I get it. Do you see this kind of being a trend a lot of other teams pick up on, or is it kind of just really a unique situation?
I mean, Kansas City's done a little bit of it this year. Oakland's tried it once a couple of times, too. So a couple of different pieces. I mean, I could see some other teams. That's the thing about baseball. Everybody copies. As soon as something works, somebody else is going to try it. We go back a couple of years ago when Kansas City became the team that didn't have all the power but didn't strike out and ran a lot. Other teams tried it. And then when other teams said, okay, we're going to go ahead and eschew contact and we're going to stack up on power hitters, oh, wow, that works. I'm going to try that too. There's going to be multiple teams that are going to try it this year. And I think one of the crazy things we'll see is we'll see some of these middle relievers getting paid more than some of these end-game starters. Well, I mean, it's nothing to see one of these end-game starters get a one-year, $6 million deal. But, you know, I know a lot was being made last year when people said, wow, you know, what are the Rockies doing giving all that money to Wade Davis and the other guy, the couple, they spent a lot of money in their bullpen this year. And then so did Philadelphia, 2 years, $18 million on Tommy Hunter. You're like, why is Tommy Hunter getting $9 million a year? And so I can see that market, if you're a middle reliever heading to free agent market, you may see a small bump in your value this year because if I could use you and you've proven a guy that could be a multi-inning reliever this year, I'll take you over a couple of you over a guy that I know that's going to be worth like half a win. If I can put two relievers together like you and get a win and a half out of you, maybe two wins, that's a better investment on the money.
No, I like it. I'm curious to see where it goes. Just a quick note, we don't have to talk about it, but those that didn't see last night, James Paxton took a shot off the elbow, left the game, x-rays negative. They're going to take an MRI. I haven't seen results on that yet, but it was scary. He wouldn't even pick up the baseball to complete the play, and he basically took himself out of the game. It was not a good look at all.
Yeah, no, I saw that. I'm in a very tight home AL league race where I'm lucky enough where I had Paxton on. He's in his final year of a deal on my roster, but then I also drafted Chris Sale in that league, and I protected Blake Snell, and then I had Tyler Skaggs. So, I mean, I have all of these talented lefties, and then I'm having problems with injuries. I also had Garrett Richards on this team, lost him already, obviously. But so I have all this pitching, and it's a good thing that I've built up a big lead in a lot of the categories because they've been slowly pecking away at it and pecking away at it. And every time I get one guy back, another one goes away. So I got Sale back on Sunday, lost Paxton.
At least he had the depth, I guess, but what could have been? Let's talk about some players that are kind of have made some impacts of late and could impact some fantasy teams. Cedric Mullins for the Baltimore Orioles, one of their kind of speed prospects coming up. They already moved Adam Jones to right field, DFA Danny Valencia. What are your thoughts on a guy like Cedric Mullins helping a fantasy team?
Well, that's the crazy thing. I mean, Valencia was actually productive. I mean, his role in his career, he's always been a guy that hits lefties really well. And, you know, he can play third base in the outfield. I have yet to see him being picked up by anybody or claims. I'm kind of surprised by that because he has some flexibility. He's a nice bat off the bench. And, I mean, that to me was a, like, wow, because he was productive this year. I mean, with Mullins, the speed has been there in the minor leagues, but at the major league level, he's playing for a manager that just doesn't really run. I mean, there are times when he will take advantage of things, but for the most part, Buck Showalter is not a fan of the running game. And, you know, even – I think that kind of proliferates down. This year, you know, Mullins had 21 steals across two different levels, and he had 30 in 2016. But at the major league level here, he's been on base, no stolen bases yet, and he only has one attempt he's been caught. And so that's really what I'm he's going to play. And that's the great thing about Mullins. They don't call a kid up like this so he can sit on the bench. And what else does Baltimore have to prove? I mean, just let him go out and play and sink and swim. I think it sets up nicely for next year so they can see what they have. Is this is this a starter or is this somebody who is a fourth outfield material? I mean, if you look at the scouting report on him, they say he could be an everyday major leaguer. When you look at the numbers, he has a 45 grade on him, according to Fangraphs, and 45 is an everyday player. Not a great one, but an everyday player.
Nice. Let's talk Touki's Toussaint. He made his major league debut a couple days ago, pitching game one of a double dip for the Braves, and he looked darn good. He's a big-time prospect arm in that system. It's been a rocky road to get here, but he definitely had a solid debut. Rumors are he's already going to get sent back down, but what's your thoughts on what maybe you saw or what you think Touki can be in the future?
22 years old. I mean, what you saw yesterday was the future. I mean, when you look at the curveball, I mean, the fastball is good. And you look at that curveball, and it's really good. And he's a 22-year-old pitcher with three pitches. The only thing that it comes down to is how is he going to command those? And that's useful. That's useful in experience. And the more experience he gets, that'll happen. And you look at his climb through the minor league ladder. I mean, he spent 132 innings at low A, 105 at high A, and then 110 in double A, and he's only at 31 innings, or now, as of yesterday, 37 above double A. He needs more time. And you know, you see the curveball, you see the potential yesterday, and you're like, oh, God, call him up now. Why should they sit him down? Look what Acuña Jr. is doing, and look what Ozzie Albies is doing. Pitching's different, man. I mean, when you look at the workload, he was 141 innings last year. He's at 127 now. So if you keep him, if he were to come to the major leagues right now and throw five innings every time out for the rest of the way, that puts you like 160, 170 innings at his age. That's a lot on the arm. So for the Braves, I can see exercising caution and making sure that you're not growing that workload too much year over year. A lot of teams like looking at a 20% figure year over year. And so he'll probably come back up when rosters expand here. In 2 weeks, but he may only spot start. He may work out of the pen a little bit. Maybe they see, you know what, maybe he's got enough stuff where we can use him as a late inning weapon and out of the bullpen as we get into the postseason. Hopefully, you know, for them, they can use him as a late inning weapon, much like the Rays did with David Price in 2008.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, definitely.
Curious to see what he has coming forward. Let's talk Devin Travis, Aledmys Diaz, a couple middle infielders for the Toronto Blue Jays. Not the flashiest of names, but they're swinging some good bats, stealing a few bags here, hitting some homers. Lourdes Gurriel was on fire, gets hurt, and that kind of opened the way for both these guys to get everyday playing time. And he just started taking ground balls, so he has some time before he gets back. What kind of league do you need to be in to go for like a Devin Travis or Aledmys Diaz, or is this just don't worry about it?
I'm a big Devin Travis fan. I mean, the thing about Devin Travis is the health. He too has his own problems staying healthy. He's been dinged up here and there, but I really love his approach at the plate, watching him play. I mean, in the field, it's okay, but at the plate, I'm very impressed with what I see. I was very high on him coming into the season, even last year too, and it just hasn't really been able to hit full expectations. But if I'm in a keeper league and I can get him now on the cheap for next year, I'm in on that. With Diaz, you know, he pull heavy, right-handed guy, not a big on-base guy, but has a lot of pop, and you know, that comes with risk. So if you're trying to chase some homers, you're looking for a guy that may hit 8 to 10 the rest of the way on the very high end. But if 5 to 7 home runs can help your roster at some point, and he's going to keep playing, that's a guy. Because, I mean, the power's not questioned. He can hit for power. It's just a matter of can he avoid getting himself out and chasing those pitches away that he struggles with?
Yeah, no doubt about it. Let's talk about a couple of them. We'll split this one up. Middle infielders for your Rays. Joey Wendle. This is a guy that most people have no clue where he came from. Probably don't even know what he looks like right now. But he's sitting in the middle of that Rays order almost nightly, and he's producing day in and day out. Tell us about Joey Wendle and what his fantasy value is.
I mean, I'd like Wendell's approach is really good at the plate. I mean, I'm impressed with how, as a lefty, how he stays in there against lefties, not overmatched. He's turned himself into an everyday player. When you first looked at him, you're like, okay, this is definitely going to be a guy who can play against righties for a second division club. But he does just, I mean, he's not the fastest guy in the world, but he's a good base runner and can steal some bases. He does, he's not the biggest guy in the world, but he can turn on a good on a fastball and hit a mistake out. And he uses all parts of the field. I think it's one of the skills that's undervalued these days when everybody's shifting. You can't shift him. You're trying to figure out, okay, how is this guy? How is this guy who has is still a rookie? I mean, this is his third season in the major leagues, but he didn't have enough plate appearances to qualify. And he's having his career year at the plate is because you can't shift him. You get the two strikes, and all this. What I would do if I were the defense and playing him when he's in two strikes, I would put like all eight defenders in left center field because that's where that ball's going. And when I watch him play, every time he gets into two strikes, he's going the other way with that pitch. They're trying to pitch him away, and he's like, fine, flop. I'm going to hit it out there. He'll hit doubles and singles the other way, but he uses all parts of the field, and that's what I really enjoy about him. And he doesn't get himself out. He'll take pitches, take pitches early in the count if the strike's okay, but he doesn't expand his zone and try to do more than he's capable of. I compare that to Malik Smith, who still tries to hit home runs on pitches up at his letters, and pitchers keep throwing it there because they know he's not going to hit a home run on that pitch, but he can't lay off it. And so, Joey Wendell makes the most of himself, and Malik Smith kind of does the opposite.
Let's talk about Willy Adames, a prospect that I thought should have been playing over Echevarria last season, and he finally got the chance now to play every day. He's hitting with some power. He's stealing bases, which he didn't do a ton of in the minors. Everything's clicking at the moment for this guy. What do you think on Willy Adames?
And it's really at the moment. If you go back and if you had him in July or you watched him in July, he was not good. I mean, everybody wanted him up. He was doing great in Durham. They call him up, and he really struggled out of the gate. I'm talking about both sides. I mean, he looked terrible in the field. His footwork was bad. He'd hop a lot of throws, rush the obvious play, make some phenomenal plays. People may remember the infamous Gary Sanchez double play. I mean, that's a heads-up play by Adames. And the next day, two-hop to throw. That should have been a routine one. But then something clicked in August. And these 2 weeks in August, he's been on fire. I mean, he looks like a different guy at the plate. He's hitting the ball with authority. I mean, he still is a guy that is looking to punish pitches on the inner half. He's looking for those fastballs he can turn and burn on. And I think back in July, you go back and watch, he was having trouble getting that front foot down. And so when he went to, by the time he's trying to get swing, the ball's already in halfway on him, and he was not able to pull the ball. And he was hitting a lot of weak contact the other direction. You look at him now, and that front foot's getting down, and those hips are firing towards the pitcher's mound, so that his bat's able to come through and do what he needs to do. And that's why you're seeing him hit the ball with more authority. I mean, last night took Dellin Betances way deep to Death Valley in Yankee Stadium. You don't see a lot of people do that. Dellin Betances said a lot has been made recently of how Clayton Kershaw has pretty much owned the Giants for his entire career. That's Dellin Betances against the Rays. He has pretty much dominated them throughout his career. Yeah, and then Adames comes up and gets that fastball down there and just crushed it.
What's your thoughts on Adames next year? Like, where do you look at him in the shortstop landscape?
There's a lot of names there. That's the problem. I think you could still pick him up in the mid-teens round. I don't know. I think he can hit 20 homers in a season. I don't know if he'll steal 10 bases. I don't know if he'll hit 280 over the course of a season. But he's going to play. As long as he doesn't get hurt, he's going to be 155-game shortstop next year. And that's really where a lot of his value is going to be right now as he continues the physical maturity and we try to figure out which guy he's going to be.
Yeah. Let's talk Ronald Guzman of the Texas Rangers. He seems to hit all his home runs against the Yankees. And then something about that. And then it's a less than Joey Gallo like performance. Can we just call this a hot streak or is there something I'm missing?
He's a big dude. I just think it's really a hot streak and playing in front of a bunch of family there in Yankee Stadium and being in Yankee Stadium where pop-ups go for home runs. Come at me if you're a Yankee fan, but the stadium right field's a joke. 3-4 down the line, you shouldn't be able to build a new stadium. If you're, Fenway is one thing, but you can't be building a new park that's got those kind of field dimensions. It's terrible. But no, Guzman has got nice raw power, but it's, to me, it just feels more like matchup things. I mean, even if you look throughout the minor leagues, and he's played in some nice run environments. I mean, he's only two off his career high right now. And so Right now, he's getting the everyday playing time, but Joey Gallo light feels like a nice label. I mean, he's not striking out to the level of Gallo. He can still get his walks, but it is a once the home run to fly ball ratio goes away, the production is going to go away here.
Agreed. Let's talk about Tanner Roark. Nothing flashy about Tanner Roark at all. He really kind of disappointed for most of the year, but the last month or so, he's actually put together some pretty solid starts. Is this a guy you could look at for your stretch run, or are you kind of still hesitant on Tanner?
You know, it's kind of like the opposite of the Nationals. You know, we want them to do more, and then they don't. And then now they're not. He's doing more. I mean, I thought he was a safe pick coming into the year because he was going to be loaded with offensive support and things were going to be there. But you're right. Over his last four starts, just been dealing. Going into the pitching seven plus innings in each one of them, except for the starting in Cincinnati of all teams, he's getting seven plus strikeouts. So he's on a roll, and he's done this before. And you pick him up and you hope the Nationals don't blow any more games like they blew the other night against the Cubs and go from there. I mean, he's won his last four starts, but before that he was winless over his next seven. In fact, he was winless over 13 of his previous 14 starts and then has won four here in a row against two different levels of competition, against the Cubs, against the Brewers, against the Reds, and against the Mets. So you got the haves and the have-nots.
Yeah.
But he's beaten both types of teams. So, it looks like he's things are back on track for him, and let's see how this rides out.
Yeah, that's kind of how I felt coming into the year. I thought that was one of the safer mid to later round picks, kind of put on the back end of your rotation, and then so disappointing, like you were reading off there. And he's come together of late, so hopefully that keeps going strong. Let's talk about a couple more pitchers real quick. One, Mr. Germán Márquez. He's been dealing for the Rockies, looking really, really good. What have you seen watching Márquez?
I love Márquez coming in. I mean, coming into the year, I liked him. And the funny thing is I liked him because I thought that Colorado was going to use that aforementioned expensive bullpen to marginalize Márquez. And what I mean by that is, Márquez has historically had a terrible third time through the order penalty. I mean, like his ERA after the 18th batter is 6.65. It was terrible coming into the year. So I figured, okay, the Rockies went out and bought all these relievers. They're going to let Márquez go two times through the order, pinch hit for him, and then let the relievers finish the game. And if Márquez is having a good game, that means he's going to get five innings. Relievers can cover four, no worry. Then I look at it this year. And the only game in which he's faced fewer than 18 guys was like the third game of the year when he got into that bench clearing brawl and punched Nolan Arenado. That's the only time he's missed any time. Pardon me. That's the only time he's missed that he hasn't pitched a third time through. So he's been pitching that third time through, and he's doing better. I mean, one of the things that I look at is how he's pitched. You know, what's the difference? And he's throwing fewer fastballs. He's always had a great sinker. Always, and it's been an electric sinker. But now he's throwing more breaking balls to that point, and so it's not so predictable that third time through, and that's helping. And now what we have to look at is next year is how sustainable that is, because when a guy has got a career of doing one thing and then one year gets better, just when you're doing your projections, you have to regress towards what he's done the previous 500 innings over what he did in the most recent 70. So it's worth considering. But right now, he's doing it. I mean, he is 12-team mixed league productive right now. And I look at dollar values in a 12-team mixed league, he has a positive auction value right now. And for a Rockies pitcher in a 12-team mixed league, having a positive run value, that's almost unheard of. But he's doing it. And then in an NL format, he's an $8 pitcher. And that's a guy that you probably, if you even rostered him in a 12-team mixed league, he was a reserve pick. And even in the NL, he may have cost you $5 on draft day. So he's turning a profit either way.
And you mentioned, for a Rockies pitcher, it's pretty impressive because they're all starting to deal there. You know, you got Freeland, you have Tyler Anderson, John Gray after his little hiatus is pitching better. You got Márquez. They're all pitching really good at home, too. They figured something out in the philosophy of that ball club, so it's impressive to see.
Yeah, you can't change the outfield dimensions. I mean, that's the thing. The thing that gets overlooked with there, it's not the home run as much anymore. It's just the amount of open space that's there that the balls can fall in for base hits. And if you're playing no doubles defense, you're going to allow a bunch of singles. If you're playing in and anything gets through, it's an automatic triple. But then you look at a lot of people say, okay, yeah, he stinks at home. He has had problems at home. But then you look at this run that he's on right now, the quality of opponent. held Oakland to 2 runs over 7 2/3, held Milwaukee to 2 runs over 7, held Houston to 1 run and 3 hits over 7 last night. So, I mean, he's pitching against quality opponents right now that are doing well against other teams, but they're not doing good against Marquez.
Yeah, he's been doing darn good. Let's talk about another one of your Rays arms here, Tyler Glasnow. Everyone, you know, thought he'd be this good prospect and never really panned out in the bigs. Gets a new shot there with Tampa Bay, part of the opener program. They're stretching him out to looks like probably become a starter again. Yeah. He looked great. What are you seeing there?
Man, it's been fun to watch him pitch. I mean, when you look at him and Archer, you're talking about two different pitching philosophies from the organization. So Pittsburgh is a big believer in heavy fastball, but heavy fastball down and in. I mean, they like to generate, to work off their infield defense. That's been their philosophy. Then you look at the Tampa Bay philosophy, and it's the up-down philosophy. Fastballs up, fastballs down, change eye levels, and other pitches to the sides. You know, avoid the heart of the plate, work up, work down, paint to the sides, but changing eye levels and working that. You know, there's some great, if people go and read Perry Husband's stuff on effective velocity, that's where a lot of the Rays pitching philosophy is based off of, because Jim Hickey, their previous hitting coach who set the policy for a lot of the organization, you know, that he was an early convert of the effective velocity. So that's something to go look at. But that's really where Glasnow has succeeded, because now he can take that upper 90s fastball and work it up and down instead of mostly just down and down on the inner half. So he's working it up and down. And then he's able to take the breaking ball and get ahead in the count. And that breaking ball becomes better because he doesn't have to use it to throw strikes. And I like calling them pseudo strikes. You throw something that looks like a strike until you start swinging at it, and then it falls out of the zone. And if you've watched him pitch, he's been able to do that. But he's been able to come back and just overpower guys with the fastball too, because 99 up is really hard to hit if you put it where the catcher's calling for it. I mean, if you're throwing 99 up in a 3-0 count, somebody has a green light, it's not that hard to hit for guys looking for it. But if you're in a 1-2 count and you're getting 99 and you were expecting the fastball down, or you were expecting a breaking ball, and all of a sudden, oh, God, here's fastball, I've got to protect, and then it's by you. So it's been he's been throwing gas right now. It's been fun to watch him command. And, you know, you look at a guy, when you see the scouting report of him back in the Pittsburgh, you even watched him, you could know he throw with good velocity, but the command really wasn't there. And now they're letting him, they're working him as a starter. His pitch counts have gone up a little bit each time. And that's really the last frontier with him is going to be controlling the running game. Because when he puts guys on, people, Caleb Joseph stole a base the other day. I mean, there have been guys that are stealing. Mike Trout and Glasnow's first outing, stole second pretty much standing up.
That's not good.
It was bad. Pardon me. But so that's really the other thing. I think they're 11 for 14, 12 for 15 against him in the running game this year. That's the final frontier. That's going to hold stuff back. But when I watch him pitch, he is performing like I wish Archer would have the last couple of years. I mean, Archer was at this level, and I think Archer's still capable of doing something like this. But right now, Glasnow is pitching like I wish Archer would have pitched this year. That said, even though Archer didn't pitch as well as I had hoped for this year, he sure brought a hell of a return back.
Yes, he did. What are your thoughts on Glasnow, Meadows, and now Mr. Shane Baz coming over your way?
I mean, Meadows will be up here in 2 weeks. It gives them – one of the things they really didn't have is a left-handed hitting outfielder. I mean, in the system, one they could count on as an everyday guy. I mean, Joe McCarthy is in Durham. He's been hurt for a good chunk of the second half. But I liked what I saw of him early in the season. He made me a reserve guy. But you can put Meadows in left field. You've got Kiermaier in center. You've got Tommy Pham now under control in right. That's a very athletic outfield offensively and defensively, which should be impressive. And Shane Baz, and he's in rookie ball. He's 3 hours north of me in Princeton, West Virginia right now. It'll take a few years, and maybe he is on his way in as Glasnow is on his way out. By then, you've got a continual starter at that point. But we'll see how that works. But if you were to tell me at the beginning of this year that the Rays would be able to trade Chris Archer for Glasnow, who was ranked either first or third in the Pirates system each of the last 4 years that he was eligible for rankings, and this year's number two and number three prospect, I would have laughed at you. And they basically – and that's exactly what they got out of him. And this is when you talk – it applies to fantasy too. Know when to sell. I mean, there was – one quality starter that was out there at that point, because the Mets really weren't trading Jacob DeGrom. And there were multiple teams that wanted him. And this was the price that came up. You have to think that Atlanta was trying to get him too. But I don't know if anybody could have topped the offer that they ended up getting from Pittsburgh.
No, that's absolutely outstanding, that deal and all the deals, the Tommy Pham deal, Jalen Beeks, you name it. They did a great job rebuilding that whole system. And from the major leagues up, they got a much better ball club.
I made a side bet with one of the guys I work with, because he's a big Braves fan. We're always talking. He's like, man, you're the only guy I know who cares about Tampa Bay. And I was like, hey, next 5 years, they're making it back to the World Series. Book it. And since I'm his boss, I'll have to hold him to it.
Yeah, I like it. I like it. Let's have a couple of debates real quick. The one that's, you know, too easy, but everyone's doing it. And I'm just curious for people's opinions on it. Ronald Acuna has been on an absolute tear. And as we record, first pitch of his at-bat, Jose Urena hit him in the elbow. Urena got ejected. Acuna left the game. So we'll see what comes out of that. But Acuna versus Juan Soto. What are your thoughts on these guys going into 2019? Because they've just been amazing.
We're all going to overpay for him. Yeah. Honestly, that's what it comes down to. It is when they called Soto up, I remember doing the old, you were recording of what we were doing to sleep, we're in the bus, and I just said, it's like that Michael Cera gif, all in. I am all in on Juan Soto. And I can't, that's what my reply was on Twitter every time somebody asked, hey, what? I just like, I'm all in. Yeah. Just push in. And he's backed it up. He has been phenomenal. And I just really like what I see at the plate. And the same thing with Acuna Jr. You look at the way how the ball just flies off his bat to all fields. You can't go wrong either way. Offensively, you can go wrong by overreaching for him and always thinking that the next level is up. You know, maybe the next level is down a little bit and then it comes back up. But you know, I don't want to be. But I said this year. I didn't want to be the one out there overpaying for Ozzie Albies. And then you saw how he started off in April, and a lot of the teams who owned him stayed up in the standings. And then the same one paying for Acuna Jr. I didn't do it last year. Maybe I'd do it this. Maybe I'd do it in 2019. Like, fine. I didn't want to play the risk, and it cost me because I'm not going to win any of my leagues this year. And some guys that chase the rookies are, but I'm going to go against the track record of letting other people overpay for rookies. And it's going to be tough to withhold, especially Soto. But I just really love watching that guy hit for 19. He's not even 20 years old yet. He looks so much better than a lot of guys in their late 20s in the major league right now.
Yeah, bat Soto has, where he can go from an 0-2 count to a full count with four more foul balls. And just the things he can do at the plate are so impressive. And you mentioned both these guys, we are going to overpay for them. And I'm with you on the strategy of, I don't like taking rookies early and all that kind of stuff, but it's working. And I think a lot of it has to do with, I've heard a lot of other analysts talk about it. It's just the new era we're living in, where they're getting the chance early because they are that good and they can be that good. And we're starting to see the development of these players a little differently. So we shall see. But one more debate I wanted to ask you, because I believe you got to see these two in person the other night. You were in Charlotte, weren't you?
I was, but only one of them played.
Yes, Vlad did not play, which is a crime. He should be out. Well, I don't know what's worse of a crime, him not playing there or in Toronto. One of those two. But Eloy Jimenez hit a bomb. This guy is so impressive. What was your takeaway from seeing him in person?
I've seen Jimenez a couple of times in person, because I've been to about 10 Charlotte games this year, and he's been in the last four. He is about three quarters legs. He is all trunk. I mean, all legs. I mean, and when you watch him at the plate, he's got a very wide stance. I wouldn't say it's like Jeff Bagwell wide, but it's wide. And one of the things that impressed me is that front foot. He really turns it in as his timing mechanism. And so when he lifts up, he's ready to go. And then the home run he hit the other night, that ball got deep on him, and he still was able to flick his wrist and hit it six rows deep in the right center field. And so, you know, it wasn't a pull shot, because I've seen him hit a pull shot homer, and the left fielder just looks and doesn't even move. And so the ball just really flies up his bat. But I was impressed with how deep he was able to let that ball go and then still just flick and then hit it like he did. And that's not a small park to right field. I mean, right down the line is 325. But that right center field, and there's never a wind blowing out that direction. That thing was gone off the bat, and it was high too. But you could tell by the sound it was going to be gone. But yeah, I missed out on Vlad Guerrero. I drove to Johnson City, Tennessee on Friday, and that game was rained out, and that was supposed to be for Wander Franco. So yeah, I missed two of the top three prospects in baseball in the last 4 days. Princeton, West Virginia is 3 hours north of me, and I'm really tempted to go up there and try again to see Franco and then now Boz pitch up there, but I'm afraid I'm going to drive up there, and that's going to get washed out too. So I will. I guess I'll just wait for the Arizona Fall League and see who's going to the Fall League, and I'll watch them out there.
Yeah, that'll be another fun group of players. We saw last year's was just amazing. Can't imagine it'll be much different this year. But involving Eloy and Vlad, so we just talked about Acuna and Soto are going to be overpaid for. This year it seems like maybe Vlad and Eloy will kind of be in that Acuna this past year mold. Would you be willing to take that chance on those two guys this year?
It's tough. I have a tough time when I look at Eloy Jimenez, just because the numbers are so insane this year of what he's done in AA and AAA. It's just crazy to see that. But the power is absolutely real. But when I try to figure out where he's going to be, at the major league level, maybe he produces like Jose Abreu as a first base. And when you look at the fact that Jimenez just doesn't run because he's too big. But yeah, he's got plenty of power in that regard, and he can hit for average. Like I said, he covers the plate very well. But at the same time, you've also got Vlad Jr. in Toronto in that run environment and the parts he's going to play in. I give the slight push here to Vlad for 2019 offensive production because of the home environment and where he's going to play on the road. I mean, you've got the nice cozy Fenway wall. You've got the cozy situation in Baltimore with terrible pitching, and if they leave him out there to play the whole time, it could be a special season there as well. So I love both dudes. I have a tough time picking one, but I'm going to give a slight edge to Vlad there as the, I guess, overall offensive production. But I think Jimenez will be the better home run hitter, but I think in overall, but the rest, you look at the offensive run production, like weighted on base average, weighted runs created, that's going to be Vlad.
Gotcha. Well, Jason, I appreciate you joining me tonight. A lot of fun, a lot of great info, as expected. Let everybody know what you have coming up and where they can find you.
Sure. Sleeper in the Bus recording. The ones I'm on will be back starting this weekend. We've had Justin Mason, the producer, has been moving, so that's been an issue. And so, we've got a recording. We'll do one on Sunday before I've got to run out and do my first fantasy football draft here with a bunch of other local Charlotte writers. And I have not even read a single fantasy football thing yet, because if you follow me or listen to me, you know my stance. Fantasy football is something I do to kill time until draft season. Somehow I win some leagues, and I honestly put 10 minutes of effort into it. But thanks to all my friends at RotoWire, I can read what they have, and that's my effort. I read recommendations, I throw them in, but I have my first draft on Sunday afternoon. But I have my collect calls piece at RotoWire is actually on Herman Marquez, so look into that. And then I've got be starting to do some of the game recaps and some of the players as well over the weekends, because I see some of the comments and I'm like, hey, I want to add some jokes and put some things in. So they're going to give me some turns over the weekend and adding some of the comments and the game recaps on RotoWire. So look for those too.
Awesome.
Awesome.
Well, everybody, go check them out. Twitter, Jason Follett. Thanks for joining me, man. I really appreciate it.
Hey, sure thing, man. Enjoyed it.
Everybody, this was Bench with Bubba, episode 115. Catch you guys later.
Life's better with an auto policy from American Family Insurance. No matter what dreams you're driving towards. That's because our expert agents will make you feel totally protected with the right auto coverage at the right price. you'll also save up to 23% when you bundle auto with home. American Family Insurance. Get a quote, find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.